Hello, welcome to another episode of Pluto and the Mundane. My name is Augustina Cartagena, and I'll be your host for this. So this is an astrological and historical mashup podcast. The reason I started this was because I really wanted to see what Pluto returns look like. When you talk in astrology, when you talk about planetary returns, you're talking about when a planet comes back to where it was at the time of your birth. And the reason why I look at Pluto returns specifically is because Pluto takes 249 years to travel around the sun. So no one lives that long. Maybe some point in biblical times, if you want to believe those stories, people did, but nowadays no one does. Though maybe we will at the end, by the end of the century, who knows? So I really wanted to find out what Pluto returns look like, because that just doesn't happen. Neptune is another one, but Neptune has a different kind of energy that I wasn't as into checking out. Okay, so for this week, I'm looking at the Ottoman Empire. Last week, I looked at Heian period Japan, and the week before that was Heian period Japan. Last week was Tang Dynasty. So if you're interested in that, check it out. For this week, I also decided to look at Pluto oppositions, which are also rare. Those happen like 125 years. So also not common, and I'm glad I did because there's some pretty interesting little coincidences later on that I really enjoyed delving into. So the way I go about this is I do a brief little introduction to the Ottoman Empire, and then I go through every aspect of the chart or every planetary aspect and what it means in mundane astrology and what I found that corresponds to that fits. So the Ottoman Empire really technically started in the year 1299, but there's no birth date associated with that, and can't do a birth chart without a birth date. So I decided to go back to the birth of the classical period of the Ottoman Empire, and this is marked by the conquest of Constantinople by the Ottomans, and this happened on May 29th, 1453. So here's the birth chart. So when you're looking at the sun, let's start with that. The sun in Gemini is where it is here, and with mundane, when you look at just the straight definition of mundane astrology, you're looking at the monarch and the aristocrats essentially are highly concerned in education, transportation, communication, and the sciences. That's the correspondences of Gemini. So this was really interesting. I didn't realize that the Ottoman Empire was at its height during the Islamic Golden Age. And so that's what was going on right now. So during this time, there were several sultans that commissioned translations of all of these old Greek classics, like your Ptolemy, all of the Greek classics that are revered by the West were translated and preserved by the Ottomans. And they had then several sultans commissioned and expanded upon the library in Istanbul. And they just spent a lot of money to make sure that there was ready access to education. And then when it came to educating the citizenry, the sultans would provide funds for the equivalent of like a high school or secondary school. So they're very much involved in education, to the point where they would even accept foreign scientists, mathematicians, and physicists and astronomers into the court. You didn't have to be from the empire proper. Well, the empire was vast, so they were still part of the empire, but you didn't have to be part of like the majority class in order to be able to participate in that. Timurids was like a historical enemy of the Ottomans. There was a scientist, Ali Kushji, who became very prominent within the court and an advisor to the Sultan. So that kind of shows you how much they cared about education. And that fits really well with the sun being in Gemini. And I just like how that those correspondences really work out for these empires, various empires. Sun in Gemini. Done. That's a pretty solid correspondence. I don't think I need to go too much more into that. So next, let's go with moon in Pisces. So the moon really is, you're describing like your common people, the crowds, regular people, you, me, what most of us would be. If I ever get any modern aristocrats or oligarchs listening to my podcast, then it doesn't fit them. But otherwise, you know, it's us. And with it being in Pisces, this is Pisces has the association of philanthropic societies and institutional religious structures. So with the moon being in Pisces, that means that there's a reliance of the common people on religious structures in order to kind of provide for their day to day. And what's really interesting is that, so during the Ottoman Empire, there was a system of, it's called millets or millet. I'm not sure. I was adding some French to it, calling it millet, but I don't think that's it. And these were like independent courts of law that represented different religious communities. So this empire was very large, and so they were and had conquered many different people. So there were Christians there, there were Jews there, there were Orthodox Catholics were there as well. And so each of them had their own governing body based off of their religion. And very much specifically based off religion. It wasn't really based off of nationality so much, because during this time there wasn't really a concept of nationality. So that was really interesting to really find, and how perfectly it fit, like the common people literally relying on these religious structures to govern them. And they of course had to listen to the Sultan, but they really listened to their local religious leaders. And they enforced laws, they enforced religious ideals, they provided education for the most part as well. So I think that works perfectly there. So we've done the sun, we've done the moon, let's go to Mercury. So here Mercury is in Cancer, and Mercury governs, you're looking at the literary world, trade and commerce, national communications. And with it being in Cancer, you're seeing a focus on housing, land, and agriculture, and also political opposition, which is interesting. When it comes to the literary world, Ottoman literature, there wasn't like a whole lot of emphasis on nature. So last week we looked at Tang Dynasty, and they also had a Mercury in Cancer, and they had a really strong association and emphasis on nature when it came to their literature, but not so here. But what is interesting is that there was, so their poetry, their divan poetry during this time period was highly symbolic in nature, which was and heavily influenced by Sufi mysticism, but also really played with oppositions and similitude. Like there were these overriding themes of, like, one of them was the world and the rose garden, which represented like reality and the Garden of Paradise, or at the same time, it didn't have to be the Garden of Paradise, but it could be a Garden of Thorns and like the material world. And there's also this idea of the nightingale and the garden, which the nightingale was like a lover or an aspirant or someone who was really wanted to worship God, versus the garden, which would be like the person who was being loved, or God, or any of these things. So they like to play with that opposition. So I thought that was a kind of interesting little correlation there when it came to Mercury. So I think that kind of fits. It's a little bit of a stretch, but Cancer literally does include the term opposition. So I think I'm gonna let that slide. I think it counts. Moving on to Venus in Taurus. So something that I found really interesting, again, comparing it to last week's episode, we had the Tang Dynasty also had a Venus in Taurus. In both of these empires, with Venus in Taurus, women had quite a bit of power outside of the home. Specifically focusing on Ottoman Empire, women could own property. They could approach the judicial system without a consulting or accompanying male. They could acquire education. I mean, it was still limited. Like they had to be, it was mostly like religious stuff that they could get, like higher education outside of the household, but they could still get that. They could be financially independent. Being able to own property helps out with that a lot. And though they were for the most part governed, well, everyone was, but women in particular were extra governed by Sharia law, which really, how do I say this? Well, mate can't be sexually promiscuous, for example. You still had to emphasize modesty and modesty, really. That's like a big emphasis that sticks in my head. But that's very similar to how Tang Dynasty women were. So I'm seeing this association with Venus and Taurus, seeing that women just are allowed more autonomy. I'm not sure if that's going to be consistent going forward, but for right now, that's the correlations that I'm seeing, and that makes me kind of happy. So there's also, just letting women participate in the economy. That's just really nice. So Venus, of course, doesn't just rule women's roles in society. It's also talking about diplomacy and the arts. And so what I'm really seeing too, because there was a flourishing of the arts during this time. This is considered a golden age, a high classical age of the Ottoman Empire. I'm thinking also that when there's a Venus in Taurus, I'm thinking that also indicates a golden age, because that's just what was happening here. There was an explosion in arts and literature, and that subsequently led to more people getting educated and becoming literate, which led to people being able to participate in the economy more because they were able to diversify the ways that they could earn money. So it's just like I really do think that the Venus and Taurus placement is more of a indication of a golden age at this point. So that's Venus and Taurus. So we've got the sun, we've got the moon, we've got Mercury, we've got Venus. Now let's move on to Mars. One of the notes I was making here is the Ottoman Empire is older than from May 29th, 1453. And as such, I just wanted to make note of that because Mars in Cancer, that really translates to military expansion. This is, the Ottoman Empire was constantly expanding. It didn't really lose a lot of land at all until like their first Pluto return, which I'll get to in a bit. But they were very successful militarily. They had some hiccups here and there in terms of being able to finance their armies. Like they had a couple of times dealing with runaway inflation at a certain point, specifically after the Spanish did their whole deal in the New World and bringing silver over from the Americas. That led to a period of inflation. Other than that, the Ottoman Empire was really big on expansion, really successful at it. And this Mars in Cancer placement really explains that military expansion focusing on land and agriculture. Well, not so much on agriculture, but they were an agrarian society, so yes. That's all I really have to say about Mars. I don't really want to get into all of the military battles that they got into. That's not my jam. That's not my area of interest. So let's move on to Jupiter and Aries. So what's really interesting, this Jupiter and Aries. So Jupiter, when you're looking at Jupiter in a nation chart in mundane astrology, it's about the religious and judicial world in like broadly. You can delve deeply into that, but it's really about what are the religious and what are the judicial structures and administrative functions in this nation. Like how did they play out? And then when you're looking at Aries, it's really focused on how it projects power out into the world and how it appears to the world. It's very first house in that kind of way. First house deals with the self and appearances and how you project yourself out to the world. So very similar there, very similar correspondences there. But what I found interesting is that, again, I went back to the millet system, this judicial structure that really focused on helping their local people. And this is how the Ottoman Empire, as it expanded, how it would appeal to people, because it would basically show to people as like, we're just ruling you. You just have to pay tribute to us, but you can maintain your structures, whatever they are. We don't care. Because of that ability of letting people rule themselves in their personal lives, a lot of the research that I was reading was talking about how that's a key reason for why the Ottoman Empire was able to spread as much as it did and to be in power for as long as it was. The Ottoman Empire didn't get dissolved and replaced by the Republic of Turkey until 1922. That's And if you want to go from 1299 to 1922, that's a long time. That's a good aged empire. So it's pretty perfect with this Jupiter and Aries placement. And I love it when it works out that way. So next, I'm going to go into Saturn in Libra. So this one was interesting because Saturn has a lot of different correspondences. There's the pandemics, there's national grief and sorrow, elderly populations, mortality rate. But those aren't super easy to get into. So the ones that I tend to focus on for these are resource extraction. So like metals that are extracted from the earth, coal, gold, those kinds of things. Really heavy, tangible, structural things that you extract from the earth. That's what I focus on in Saturn for this. And then with it being in Libra, there's this emphasis on diplomatic relations. That's what Libra broadly corresponds to, is diplomatic relations and diplomacy. But what was interesting with this, with Saturn here, pretty soon after the fall of Constantinople, the Ottoman Empire conquered Egypt. And by conquering Egypt, they were able to get all of the gold that Egypt had from trade and from extraction, but mostly from trade, because at this time, Egypt was a huge trade center. A huge, like it was, Silk Road made its way through there. The trade with India went through there. Trade with China went through there. Trade through all of East Africa went through there, essentially. And even South and West Africa also, they all went through Egypt. So once it fell to the Ottomans, they had control over that. They suddenly had like this huge influx of tax revenue that came from conquering Egypt, which really influenced the political power that they had in the region. Because during this time, you have the Venetians and all of the Italian city-states that are major trade peoples. You have your Spanish and your French. They're all along that Mediterranean shore. And now they have to work with the Ottomans. Now they have to trade with them. And now they have to play nice with the Ottomans. So that conquering that just did a lot in order to expand their diplomatic power. And yeah, well, that's pretty cool. That's pretty handy to have. Pretty fitting with this Saturn in Libra placement. And I think that's really where I'm going to end up on, because I really want to focus on the classical planets when it comes to mundane astrology, just because those are the easiest to find information on, easier correspondences to really understand, besides Pluto, of course. But your classical planets in astrology are your inner planets, Mercury, the Sun, Mercury, Venus, Mars, and the Moon, and Saturn and Jupiter. All of the other planets that were discovered in the 20th century, those are more modern astrology, which I prefer when it comes to personal readings, but not necessarily for this stuff. So that's the basics. That is like a basic rundown of what the Ottoman Empire was like. So now to the meat and potatoes of this, the oppositions and returns. I'll start with the opposition. So an opposition in astrology is when it's basically when you're looking at the birth chart, where one planet started out at and where the opposite side of it is, that's an opposition. And that opposition usually brings tension and struggle. Okay, so first Pluto opposition, you're looking at June 21st, 1536. And the opposite of Leo is Aquarius. So it's in Aquarius at this point. And so this first opposition saw the establishment of the Franco-Ottoman alliance, which was one of the most important alliances that the French had during the High Middle Ages, and was extremely helpful for the Ottomans during their wars with the Italian city-states. And I personally find it really interesting that the sign of community, the sign of friendship, the sign that concerns itself with friendship, saw this like treaty that really helped them out during their expansion. The Ottomans during their trying to get more land happened during when it's in the sign of friendship and community. I think that's really awesome. That's beautiful, which is very different from what happened during its return. And it's interesting because, like, generally I associate oppositions with having some kind of tension, which when you're looking at a person, it's like you're trying to balance these two things or trying to figure out which one you want to put give more attention to. But here it was more like just letting friendship in. I don't really know what to make of it beyond that, but I like it. I like that it works. I like that it fits. The Pluto return into Leo happened on July 11th, 1698. This one was very indicative of how I've seen Pluto returns happen with these nations. So during this year, this was the year of the Battle of Samothrace, which is noted for being the last battle of the Great Turkish War. And the Ottoman Empire lost this war, like, pretty soundly. And this was and as a result, they lost a lot of their land holdings, which was the first time in the empire's history that they'd lost land like that. Because when you're talking about war, there's a lot of back and forth as to, oh, you have this land, you don't have it anymore, just depending on troop advancement, how fighting happens, how diplomacy turns out, all these different factors. And the Ottoman Empire had lost land throughout the centuries, but never in any large amounts until this point. They lost like a good, not third, like a almost a quarter of their land holdings through this. It was basically all of Hungary, Polish-Lithuanian area, and the Western Balkans. So pretty transformative event, and definitely an end of a cycle, because before this they were keeping on expanding. After this, they didn't really expand anymore. Like, this is, after this there was a period of stagnation, actually, which was followed by a period of reform and then collapse of the empire. So it's interesting just to, like, how solidly that ended that cycle for them, that cycle of expansion, which you would expect with a return. Returns are usually indicative of an end of a cycle. And then, so there were no more returns. The Ottoman Empire only experienced one Pluto return, but it did experience one more Pluto opposition. And this was another treaty. So this happened on February 21st, 1782. And it was a peace treaty with the Spanish. So the Spanish, after their conquering, raping, pillaging of the New World, had a lot of money, and they had a lot more military power, and they decided to try and expand into the Mediterranean Sea for money, for trade, for all these things. The general reasons why people go to war. And so there were a lot of skirmishes between the Spanish and the Ottomans during this time. And in 1782, during their final Pluto opposition, again in the sign of Aquarius, the sign of friendship and community, they signed a peace treaty where they pretty much just hashed out where they would have their navy in the Mediterranean Sea. After this final opposition in 1782, the empire eventually kind of fell into a point of stagnation and then reform, and was replaced by the Turkic Republic in 1922, which was about 24 years before what would have been the second Saturn return. So I wanted to jump in here and make a quick note. I keep saying Saturn return instead of Pluto return, and I want to apologize for any confusion that causes. My only excuse is that I've been doing chart readings for a few people recently, and they're all pre-Saturn return, so I've just been talking about that almost nonstop. So apologies, I totally meant Pluto return. And yeah, that's it. That's all I got for you guys today. This was really fun. It kind of fried my brain a little bit doing all the research, because I decided to do a mess of the research right before coming on here, as opposed to spreading it out throughout the week. I love doing this. Pluggables. I am on Instagram. That one's witchy_woven. It's like a different like account that I have. I'm on Twitter, Pluto and the Mundane. Though it's I'm not consistent about posting when I'm gonna go live or anything on that. And Twitch. So if you're listening to this on the podcast, I'm on twitch.tv/astroseeker. A-S-T-R-O-S-E-E-K-E-R. And I do live streams on Sunday nights and on Wednesday afternoons. I do astrological forecasts for the week ahead. Yeah, that's it. Thank you so much. I'm going to say good night. Enjoy the rest of your evening and thanks for hanging out. Bye.